Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is the sixth podcast that I've recorded. I'm recording it in August of 2008, and the title is Rob Bennett, the Reluctant Investing Expert. I talked about this theme a little in the last podcast that I recorded, the one on the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate, and I started out that podcast by mentioning how there was a day when I would have thought that the idea of writing a book about investing had no appeal to me whatsoever. It's just not the sort of subject that I could see myself writing about or spending enough time researching to come up with ideas to make it worth anyone to read what I had to write on that subject. And what turned me around, of course, was the things I learned during the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. So as I was listening back to that podcast, it hit me that I really need to discuss this issue in a little more depth, because when you put yourself forward, when you write a book on investing or you put out podcasts on investing, you are certainly putting yourself forward as an expert. There's no question about it. You are saying to people, please take some time out of your day to listen to what I have to say on this subject. And people quite properly should be asking, why should I listen to what Rob Bennett has to say? There are many investing experts out in the world. What does he bring to the table that none of the others bring? Why should I take time out of my day to listen to him? And this is doubly so in my case, because I do not have the standard qualifications of an investing quote-unquote expert. I did not study investing in school. I do not manage any big mutual fund. I have not, at least till this time, been widely quoted in any of the leading journals, the Wall Street Journal or any of the investing journals, anything along those lines. So why does what I have to say matter? Now, I would say my brief answer to that question is, I don't come to this field with the idea of learning all what's written in the books. That just doesn't interest me much. And frankly, I don't expect ever to do that. I do, to the extent I need to do it, to be able to answer questions that come up in our discussions, I do it. But in general, that doesn't turn me on, and I don't feel that I can add anything that 100 other people out there couldn't tell you, today by you looking them up on Google or whatever. So something that I bring to the table that I don't think many of the other people today commenting on investing bring to the table is a journalist perspective. And that's my background. I've made my living as a journalist for a long time now. And that's how I come to this investing project. The history, as I explained in that earlier podcast, is that all I really knew about investing before the Great Debate was what I needed to know to make my own investing decisions. So just like everybody else, I did some research. I did more extensive research than most people do, because I was taking a more dramatic act. I was handing in a resignation from a high-paying job with the thought that I could live off of my savings until I had a writing business producing enough income that I would no longer need to be pulling from those savings. So I did need to be more cautious. I needed to be more careful in my investing decisions than most others do. And so as a result, I researched things more deeply and discovered things that not many people know. But that would not have been anything close to enough to make me a quote-unquote expert. What did make me an expert, and please keep that word in quotes every time I use it, what did make me an expert is my participation in the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. I kicked off that debate with a post to the Motley Fool discussion board. And, you know, as I described in that earlier podcast, the debate just grew to this huge, all-encompassing thing. Hundreds of thousands of posts at half a dozen different discussion boards. And we learned all sorts of things that are rarely talked about in the investing literature. So there's this slice of the subject that I know, I think, better than any human being alive today. I think that's a fair statement. I don't think there is anyone alive today who understands the slice of the investing project that I understand. And the strange, dramatic part of this is that that slice is, I believe, the most important slice. It's the slice that determines the value of everything else you hear. And of course, I had no idea this was going to happen when I ventured down this road. It's something I fell into. Whether it was a good thing for me or a bad thing is yet to be decided, because there are some respects in which it's been a very, very bad thing. You know, as I mentioned in the earlier podcast, there are people out in the world today who hate me because of what I have said about investing, and they are not kidding around. These people hate me with a passion, and nobody likes to have people hate them, and certainly no one likes to have large numbers of people hate them, and I don't. And so in that respect, and I have built some discussion boards. I am a big believer in the power of the internet discussion board as a communications medium of the future. And I have built some very successful discussion boards. I'm very proud of that work. And those discussion boards have been burned to the ground by abusive posters who became abusive because they were trying to stop discussions of investing that I had started with things I had learned during the Great Debate. So the things that I have brought to the table have caused the destruction of these wonderful learning resources. So that's another big negative that has come out of this. But, of course, the positive is that the ideas have passed every test. The ideas that have been put forward have great potential to help millions to learn how to invest more effectively in the future. So, on the one hand, I sort of wish I had never gone down this road. On the other hand, it's the most exciting work I've ever done, and we'll just have to wait and see how that all turns out. But as I say, the reason why I think you should listen to what I have to say about investing is that I understand this slice of the investing project, I believe, better than anyone alive today. Now, what is that slice? If you took everything I have ever said about investing, and I've committed hundreds of thousands of words to this subject, you could really boil it all down to five words. Valuations affect long-term returns. Five words, two of them hyphenated. That's my message. That's what I bring to the table. I am the guy who says valuations affect long-term returns. Now, I think that slice is of huge importance, because if you understand what those five words mean, if you accept and understand those five words, all of your investing strategies will change. You will never, ever, ever again be a passive investor if you understand those five words, because those five words are in direct conflict with the passive investing model. And I can demonstrate that so just by pointing to the name. What does passive investing mean? What is it that the passive investor is passive about. The thing he's passive about is valuation changes. Passive investors are people who say, I'm going to stick with the same stock allocation, no matter what happens, no matter how much prices change. And Rob Bennett says, that's a bad idea. That's a horrible idea. That cannot work. It has never worked through the history of the market. So those five words dominate everything. What I believe we should all be talking about when we talk about investing is, to what extent should we change our allocations when prices change? That's the single most important strategic question. And I would like to see, my vision of the future of investing is a world in which you have hundreds of discussion boards all over the internet where every day people get together and discuss the question of, to what extent should I change my stock allocation when prices change? Because there are many different perspectives you can add to this. The more you study it, the more there is to study. It's a subject like that. And I've devoted many, many hours of my life to answering these strategic questions. And I do the best I can. I put forward my best take on the subjects I examine. But I want to tell you right up front, I don't want anyone taking my word on anything I say at my website, because I like to think I'm a reasonably smart person, and I do believe I work hard to be fair and balanced in what I present. But that's not enough. That's not enough. There is no human being in the world who is smart enough and fair enough that you can listen to that one person and decide from that person how to invest. So I don't want anyone to go by what I say solely. I want everyone to read what I have to say, because I believe it's of great value. But I then want people who read what I say to take what I say and think about it, think about whether it matches with their own experience, whether it makes sense in their own mind. And then I want them to explore what other quote-unquote experts say and see whether it holds up or not. And then I want them to talk these ideas over with their friends, because that's a different way of learning, sort of the back and forth process you go through when you talk an idea over with other people exploring that same topic. Only then, only after you've done all that, can you say, okay, these are ideas that are good enough for me to make investing decisions based on them. Now, but that's all it comes to. It's those five words. And it's those five words plus all of the implications that follow. There was a woman on the Vanguard discussion, Vanguard Diehards discussion board. And she put up a post that I think is my favorite post I've ever read in the investing area. I say that because she was so obviously sincere. She was not agreeing with me, but she was so obviously sincere that what she said hit me at a very deep level. And the poster's name was Janie. That was her screen name. And I won't quote what she said. I'll paraphrase it. But she said, Rob, there were a lot of people. When I give my investing views, my investing view, remember, is that valuations affect long-term returns. When I give my investing views, I frequently, there's a lot of static directed at me, a lot of abusive posting, as well as a good number of people who are very excited to hear the ideas. But there always is a lot of abusive posting. This has been a consistent reaction. And she said, Rob, everything you're saying makes sense. When I read your post, they make sense. But I do not have time to study all this in depth. I have a life to live. I can't, the phrase she used was, I can't go off searching for the holy grail of investing. So I have to go by what the big name experts tell me. And the big name experts, Rob, are not saying what you're saying. They're not. So I'm sorry, I can't go along with your message. Now, she's doing the right thing. If she is not persuaded of the ideas, Janie is doing the right thing by saying, I will not go along with what Rob Bennett says. Because even if I could wave a magic wand and get Janie to go along with what I say, that would be a mistake. Because if she made investing decisions based on what I believe, and she didn't really believe it in her heart, she wasn't convinced, it wouldn't work. All of my strategies are long-term strategies. They are all strategies you have to stick with through hard times. And if you are not strongly convinced going in, you're probably not going to stick. And if you don't stick, they're not going to work. So Janie did the right thing. What troubles me, though, what troubles me is she hit right on the head of what's going on among middle-class investors today. Middle-class investors, they are basically sensible, practical people, okay? So the thing that I am saying, valuations affect long-term returns. It's the most sensible, practical idea imaginable. So very, very few people have any trouble accepting that that is so. But most middle-class investors believe they should be able to trust the big-name experts to get it more or less right. No one holds them to getting everything perfect. But we like to think that the big-name experts get it more or less right. And I am saying that they do not. I am saying they get it horribly, tragically, terribly wrong. I am saying that the passive investing model, which is the model endorsed by most, 90% of the big name experts today, I am saying that model is flawed right to the core. So the skepticism that somebody like Janie expresses is perfectly valid and perfectly healthy and perfectly good. What is not healthy and what is not good is that we do not get, is that when we get these abusive posters, and these are the most dogmatic passive investing enthusiasts, and they're a small percentage of the community of people that believes in passive investing. The vast majority of people that believe in it in sort of a mild way, the way Janie does. And if the experts come out against passive investing, they will lose confidence. Or if passive investing produces bad results for a long enough time, they will lose confidence. But there are some who are just maniacs about it. They are just incredibly dogmatic, and they cannot stand for anyone even to question passive investing. And if we don't question it, now we're in big trouble. If we don't question it and it's wrong, then that means not only are we following the wrong strategy, it means we have no hope. We have no hope of learning that it's the wrong strategy. And that's exactly the position I believe we are in today. The people who advocate passive investing are some of the smartest people around. John Bogle is the number one advocate of passive investing, and I think John Bogle's work is top-notch. And many of my ideas have been heavily influenced by Bogle. Others, you'll hear me talk about them all the time on these podcasts. William Bernstein, Scott Burns, Jonathan Clements. These are the people that I have learned from. And those four names, those are all advocates of passive investing. And, you know, it certainly doesn't mean they're dumb. Certainly doesn't mean they're dumb. But I do believe they're wrong. And what it doesn't bother me that they are wrong. Everyone makes mistakes. That's just part of the game. So I just don't see that as, I don't see that as being a big deal. But what greatly troubles me is this dogmatism that surrounds the passive investing model. It's not so much that they're wrong, it's that they cannot entertain the idea that they are wrong. And those four people I mentioned, as good as they are, have problems in this regard. They have problems entertaining the idea that they are wrong. And of course, when you get to the level of people who post on discussion boards, the problem is much worse, because those people are far less secure than these big name experts. They're far more overly sensitive and defensive and insecure. And so those people just go mad. They just go crazy. And they engage in the most abusive posting practices imaginable to shut off debate whenever people like Janie are starting to learn. You see, Janie doesn't buy into my ideas, and that's good. I applaud her for it. But if Janie hangs around and hears about those ideas on a daily basis, because we're both part of the same discussion board community, I believe that over time, as stock prices continue downward, Janie will become more and more open to those ideas and eventually will probably adopt them as her own. And if she doesn't, of course, that's her choice. But I believe very strongly, and again, this is probably my journalism background coming into play, that when there are discussions of investing, people should be allowed to discuss both sides of the question. And passive investors cannot do this, as a rule. I really don't see this among any other type of investor. There's all sorts of approaches to investing. There's technical analysis and fundamental analysis, and there's momentum investing and value investing and all sorts of things. And I have never seen the advocates of these various approaches react in the way that passive investors react. And for a long time, I puzzled over that. And what I have come to believe is that passive investing is not really an idea at all. It's not even right to say that passive investors are wrong, because the idea of right and wrong applies to ideas and it applies to logic. And if you're going to show that they're wrong, you would need to show the flaw in the logic. The truth of the matter is there is no logic to passive investing. There is no logic to passive investing. It is pure emotion. It's just a bundle of emotion. Now, there's all sorts of logic that applies when passive investors explore particular strategies. Logic certainly comes into it then, and often their ability to apply logic is very strong. But the core idea, the idea that it is acceptable to stick with the same stock allocation when prices change dramatically, that's pure emotion. Where that comes from is the get-rich-quick impulse we all carry around within us. When we see prices shooting to the moon, we like it, and we want to participate. And our common sense tells us, no, no, no. That's bad. That's a bad idea. And our emotion says, yes, yes, yes. Maybe I'm special. Maybe it'll all turn out different this time from how it's ever turned out before. Maybe there's magic pixie dust that's been sprinkled in the air. We have an emotional pull to the worst possible investing strategy imaginable. And that's where passive investing comes into play. And what somebody like Janie is saying is these big name experts, they think passive investing's okay. It must be okay. Well, guess what? The big name investing experts are humans, just like the rest of us. They're subject to emotional pulls too. John Bogle has emotions. Bill Bernstein has emotions. Scott Burns has emotions. Just because they studied investing for 20 years or managed a multi-billion-dollar fund doesn't mean they don't have emotions. It doesn't mean they are not prone to human weaknesses. They are just as weak as all the rest of us when it comes to the question that I focus on, the question of, do valuations affect long-term returns? There is no logical argument that it does not. There is no logical argument. So if we were rational about how we invest, all of us would accept right off the bat that passive investing is impossible. It cannot possibly work. But because we are emotional, we have a longing, a deep longing for a rationalization of doing what we are emotionally drawn to do. And people like John Bogle and Bill Bernstein, and I don't mean to pick pick on them. They are some of the greatest names in the field. I'm not saying they are the worst. I'm saying they're the best. The reason I refer to them is because in general, they are so smart. But when it comes to this emotional question, smartness isn't what it's about. And what's even worse is that the smarter you are, the more you are capable of effective rationalizing. Because these guys are so smart, they are capable of rationalizing in ways you and I can't dream about. So they get it even more wrong. And of course, the more wrong they get it, the less able they are to hear that they've got it wrong. The more emotional resistance there is, the bigger the emotional blinders are. So what we're living through today, I use this phrase all the time. I say, we are living through the greatest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States. I believe that is true because so many people have bought into the passive investing model. People always buy into that model under some name whenever stock prices are totally out of control. But there are more people who bought into it today because middle-class people today are responsible for their own retirements. So there are more middle-class people looking to invest in stocks, and our communications mechanisms are more effective today. So word spreads. When these experts come up with rationalizations, they spread all over the world in days. So we all know the rationalizations. We hear them repeated over and over and over again. We are more prone to emotion today in our investing strategies than we ever have been in the past. Because in the past, you might only have a couple of friends who invested in stocks, and they would tell you this passive investing nonsense. And your common sense would be pounding out a different beat. But today, you can connect with thousands of people that agree with you that passive investing is right. So your common sense doesn't have a prayer. That's why we've gone to higher valuations than have ever been seen before in the past. That's why stocks are more dangerous today than they have ever been in the past. That's the story. And where I come from this is, I'm not going to, you know, I haven't read 1,000 books about investing. I've read a lot, but my real focus is what I learn from people, what I hear on discussion boards, and that's where the rubber hits the road. That's where you take a theory and you see how people use it in real life, which is what matters. And what you find is the people who are armed with the passive investing theory freak out when they're questioned. They freak out. They can't handle it. They get angry. They get hostile. They get scared. They run away. They put their fingers in their ears. They say, I'll put you on ignore. I won't read your stuff. They're in pain. Today, millions of middle-class investors are in pain, to different degrees, to be sure. Not everyone's at the same level of pain. But there's a lot of pain out there. It's a big problem. And when you start talking about what the historical data says, the record of how stocks have always performed in the past, that's when that pain gets acute. That's when people say, shut that guy down. Stop it. I don't want to hear it. Make it go away. Now, say that you're an investing expert and you put out an investing theory. And you see the people who agree with you discussing it on a discussion board. And you hear them responding that way. You hear them responding, saying, shut it down, make it stop, make it go away. Should that not cause some bells to ring in your head? Maybe I've made a mistake. Why does my philosophy cause such defensiveness and such anger and such pain? I say that it should. That's my little slice of the investing project. I'm the guy who, when I read about investing, I don't focus on the theory. I do talk about theory and I talk about strategy, these other things. But my focus is, how does the theory work when people try to talk about it? Does it make people feel confident, or does it make people feel scared to death? And what we've seen in the great safe withdrawal rate debate is that the passive investing model makes people feel scared to death. And I can document that 1,000 times over. And as a journalist, I think this is one of the biggest stories of my lifetime. It's been a hard story to write. As a journalist, you would sometimes hear stories about, you know, a correspondent that would go off to a war, and he's at risk of being killed. You know, there's bombs dropping all around him. And you'd say, boy, would I be willing to go through that for a story? Is it worth it? I don't know if it's worth it or not, but I'm a journalist. I fell into this. It's not anything I planned, but circumstances put me in the middle of the story, and I think it's a big story. If what I am saying is true, we are living through the greatest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States, and all that I say, there's only one thing I say, five words, valuations affect long-term returns. If that is true, we're going to see an awful lot of financial pain in years to come, and all unnecessary. And I don't want to leave this on a dark note. I want to leave it on an uplifting note. The good side is, if you give up on passive investing, we've got some strategies to tell you about. We've been doing the work for 6 years. We've been building a model of investing called rational investing. It's the opposite of passive investing in every possible way. So if you do get to a point where you're down on the model that is currently dominant, we've got an alternative for you. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.